I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where those treetops listen and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow, the snow.
I'll bet your buddy Levy has never discussed the Aztecs to "I Am Dreaming of a White Christmas." This has to be a first. Is that correct, sir?
That is very much the case, and in fact, we're having a significant White Christmas up here in northern Idaho, so it's appropriate.
Yes, yeah, that's right. You don't have to dream about it, do you?
No, I think we have a lock, a guarantee for the next week anyway, and it's going to be, we have about 10 degrees and snowing.
Well, is it beautiful?
It's absolutely gorgeous, and for me, it's a bonus. I grew up in a ski town called Sun Valley, Idaho, so this became sort of an expectation that there would be snow at Christmas, and in the Northlands here, we get maybe, it's about 50-50, I would say. So we're at a slightly lower elevation than I grew up at about 6,000 feet in Sun Valley, and here it's a couple thousand. So it's excellent. Yeah, we're having a great winter already.
You know, they say that a disproportionate number of people who do grow up at a ski resort end up writing about the Aztecs.
Well, in fact, I took a rather circuitous route to the...
That was my point.
Yeah.
Yes, in my ironic way, that was exactly what I was about to wonder. Let me appropriately introduce you. Hi, everybody. First of all, I'm Dennis Prager. Welcome to the show. And I am just delighted to have... is it Professor Buddy Levy?
Sure. That's what I make the students call me.
Well, I am your student this for this interview. Professor Levy is the author of Conquistador. He's also written a terrific book on Davy Crockett, which we should tell David Zucker about, by the way, who has one of the great Davy Crockett paraphernalia museums. And it is about Cortez, Montezuma, and the last stand of the Aztecs. And if you know nothing about it, you will know a lot about it now, how 500 Spaniards defeated 15 million Aztecs. I mean, is that a fair way to say it?
Well... That's historically, that's part of the mythology, I suppose, that, that 500, men waltzed in there and took over an empire. But in fact, one of the things that I think is important to look at is that, Cortez and his soldiers and his captains had a little bit of help along the way.
From indigenous peoples.
Correct.
Yes, and who didn't like the Aztecs?
Well, right. There were a number of groups and tribes in the surrounding area of the Triple Alliance, which is what Mexico City, the area around modern-day Mexico City was. And the Aztecs, in fact, had plenty of enemies stretching to both coasts. And Cortez was very shrewd in enlisting, and in that term, of course, enlisting sometimes diplomatically and sometimes at point.
All right. Let me just set the historical background, folks, so you'll understand. We're talking in the beginning of what is it, 1519? What exactly is the year here we're talking about? 1519? And Cortez, the Spanish or Spaniard explorer, arrives on the shores of Mexico. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. He had come directly from Cuba and then landed in Cozumel.
Okay, now let's also understand this. What motivated a man in 1519 to come to Mexico, to the New World?
Well, there had been two previous expeditions in just the a few years before that had been dispatched by another Spaniard named Diego Velázquez, who was at that time the governor of Cuba, and he wanted to find out what kind of they had pretty much exhausted the exploitation of the Indies, or were in the process of it, and were looking toward the mainland as, and they didn't know very much about it anyway, as possible areas to find precious metals and other maybe labor, man labor.
Well, if they found man labor, that would be useful for bringing back to Spain as slaves, or to use in the New World to cultivate crops?
To use in the New World to run lands, cultivate crops, and also to work mines, if they were lucky enough.
All right, so it was basically gold and precious metals oriented. It was not to settle areas for the king of Spain.
Well, that they were in the process of settlement, and one of the things that's a great question that Cortez, his initial dispatch and his responsibilities did not include settlement, but he ended up going rogue and decided once he was there that he was going to essentially break off from Velázquez and become kind of a lone wolf and create a settlement and a government. And then he had the vision to see that land ownership for the king would be in his best interest personally as well as...
All right. What motivated the other 499 men?
Well, yeah, it's interesting because a lot of the times these men... When you read the chronicles and the descriptions of the battles that they went through and some of the hardship, one wonders what would have motivated them. But
right, I do wonder what did.
Well, they were essentially mercenaries. Paid only a number of the captains would have been guaranteed, and even the captains were not necessarily guaranteed any sort of wealth, but they went along under the hope that if the mission happened to be successful, there was going to be what were called encomiendas, which were land grants to the captains who would then be able to own their own land and run this land with the indigenous populations that they...
Oh, so they were not there primarily, honey, I'll be back in about a year. I'm going to pick up some gold in the New World, and we're going to live like a king and queen back in Barcelona. That is not what motivated them?
Well, interestingly, many captains and other lower-level conquistadors would return home, but you have to understand that the trips were so long that when you said goodbye to your family, there was a very good chance of never seeing them again.
Because you would stay, or you'd be killed, or both?
Both. I haven't looked up the life expectancy of a Spanish conquistador, but it's pretty low.
Right. I understand that.
But a number of the other, just to finish up, of the 400 or 500 men who were at the final siege of Tenochtitlan, there was, in the end, divvying up of a great deal of pilfered wealth. And these men, down to the last foot soldier, were given shares of that acquisition.
Did most stay in the New World?
Yes, the preponderance of them did stay. And many of them could see that the options in the New World, as far as, I guess we'll use a modern term, lifestyle, would have been more preferable to going back. Unless, of course, you were one of the main captains and who amassed great deals of wealth, such as Cortez or the Pizarros later in Peru. And then there might be some benefit to going back.
Since I assume there were no women on board, they all took Aztec wives?
Not all, but there was a lot of gifting as Cortez and his men went along a lot of gifting from the different tribes, especially those they were trying to enlist when they learned that the Aztecs had a massive military complex. Certainly men took wives along the way, even if they had wives either in the Indies or back in Spain.
Well, they were, I'm talking about the ones staying there anyway. The ones who stayed here in the New World, that is, in Mexico, they took local wives. Did they get syphilis like a lot of the Europeans in North America got?
No, that's a good question. I didn't see any references to all right. the contraction of syphilis.
All right. I'm talking to Buddy Levy. The book is Conquistador. And when we come back, what about human sacrifice and the Aztecs? Is it exaggerated or was it the real thing?
Whenever it snows, the world is your snowball just for a song. Get out and roll it along.
Departing from politics and the like, which we do a lot anyway on the show, I love learning, and especially about the large, great subjects of the past. And there's a riveting new book out, Conquistador, by Buddy Levy, who is a professor, associate professor of English at Washington State University. By the way, it says clinical associate professor.
Yeah.
What does that mean? You run an English clinic?
Yeah, well, I think it suggests that there has to be a lab coat involved.
Yes, it does, yes.
Yeah. The designation really means that you... you practice what you preach, essentially, that you work in the field as a writer rather than only as a
I see. Okay.
As a scholar.
Teacher of it. You do it and teach it. Okay. So the book is Conquistador. It is about this astonishing, truly astonishing conflict and just the mere confrontation of two utterly and totally different worlds, the Western Spanish Catholic world and the Aztec world. Let's talk about the Aztecs for a moment. I don't want to romanticize, and I don't want to put down when not necessarily. I want the whole truth and nothing but the truth, as it were. First, let's talk about what so many associate with the Aztecs, and that is human sacrifice. Right. They had a daily one, at least, right? Because it ensured the sun came up if you killed somebody.
Yes, the giving of the still beating human heart ensured the daily rising of the sun. So you just I should say though that there were also plenty of sacrifices that were done with quail and birds and other animals, but there's no it appears from all the research that there's no getting around the fact that the human ritual sacrifice took place large level.
Do you have any idea? I've always wondered this, and I hate to be cavalier about something so monstrous, but how did you get chosen for that honor?
Well,
do we have any volunteers?
The way we look at it, it sounds like you'd hope to not be near the front of the line.
Yeah, you would. Yes, when that choosing took place, I had a cough. Yeah, right.
But there are in fact some of the rituals which involved it was a great honor to be the one chosen. And because you would be paraded around as sort of a mock deity, and
for how long? An hour?
No, sometimes for weeks, lots of fasting went on, and it was highly elaborate and stylized. So I think part of it is when we look at human ritual sacrifice, and clearly think barbarity, monstrous, horrific. But we have to remember that in the worldview of the Aztec, these are terms that might not have been associated.
Well, obviously, I there's no question about that. But in all seriousness, it's not like they grabbed somebody who went screaming to the altar.
Well, no, and in fact, you know, I think if you look at, I don't know if you saw the movie Apocalypto.
No.
By Mel Gibson, but I've talked to a number of scholars. Oh, now it dawns on me there may be a number of reasons why you wouldn't have seen that film. But
really? Now I'm unbelievably curious.
Well, Mel's track record.
Oh, no, no, no. I have no issue with that.
Okay.
I happen not to like bloody films.
Right, right.
And Mel tends to like bloody films.
Yes.
So that's the only area where I would have a problem seeing another one of his films. But go ahead.
Well, let me just say that one of the interesting elements of sacrificial victims is that they were often taken in battle. And this is something that Cortez came to understand as he went on. One of the primary differences between the way the Spanish fought battles and the way the these indigenous tribes fought was that the Spanish and the European model was certainly to kill as many of your enemy as possible. On the other hand, in Mesoamerica, a battle might be something of a mock battle, and they were called flower wars. And when it was clear that one group had defeated the other, there were a certain number of prisoners that would be taken, and those prisoners would end up being fodder for human sacrifice later. So one of the reasons that Cortez and his men were able to escape on a number of occasions was that the Aztecs would try to get a number of their of the Spaniards as prisoners, but they wouldn't want to kill them all because it wasn't their model of battle. What I was going to say about the you know, the images of human sacrifice in Apocalypto is that, you know, again, the focus is always on the very graphic nature of it, rather than perhaps the stylized or symbolic ritual of it.
Yeah, that's fair. No, I have no doubt it was a very meaningful thing to them. I find it morally repulsive, obviously, but,
yeah.
You know, if I didn't, I would have their value system. But I only wanted to understand from the victim standpoint, was somebody taken screaming, or was it, wow, am I fortunate to be the honored semi-deity to give my heart for the tomorrow's sunrise?
In more cases than not, they were taken screaming because they were also they had to be held down in many cases.
Oh, by four okay.
Priests, and they were fed hallucinogenic mushrooms in order to create a kind of ecstatic state. So
with all of this semi-deity fasting and paraded around, it's not an honor most people wanted.
No, and in fact, the Spaniards were quick to.
They observed this, the Spaniards?
Oh, yeah, they observed it. They found it repugnant, and it provided a great deal of rationale
for their slaughter.
On one of the really dark nights for the Spaniards, I should say, of the final 3-month siege, is that they lost a battle on some of these causeways, and something between the order of 60 and 70 Spaniards were taken prisoner. And while quite near the Templo Mayor, the central temple, and the Spaniards who survived the battle had to stay up all night watching from a distance and hearing their countrymen be paraded up the pyramid steps.
Wow. All right. Back in a moment. The book is Conquistador by Buddy Levy. You're listening to the Dennis Prager Show. There are too many cultures taking place at one time here. Christmas, Aztec human sacrifice, and Latkes on Hanukkah. Okay, all right, thanks, Sean. Go back to the Cleveland Browns menorah. Thank you. I'm sorry? What was that, Professor?
Yeah, I said that all of these things are a lot to process. Right?
A lot to process, absolutely. The book is Conquistador, Professor Buddy Levy at Washington State University, and it's about Cortez and Montezuma and the Aztecs, and they really did sacrifice somebody every day. They took out their beating heart, is that the point? I don't want to get too graphic here.
Right, right. The high priest in the final moments would take out the excised beating heart, which was all very elaborate, was done with a obsidian blade on a sacrificial slab, and then offer it up to the sun. And there was some cooking in braziers and some cannibalism involved as well. But
now
tough stuff.
Now this is not meant as a joke, but do we have any reason to believe that there might have been one of 15 million people in that civilization who might have once offered the heretical thought that the sun might come up anyway? Let's give it a one-day try.
Well, in fact, Cortez and his men, quite early on their arrival, decided to illustrate to a group by toppling their temples without some sacrifice, the sun might still rise tomorrow. And they did, and they pushed down all of these idols and sort of shut down the sacrifice for the day through force. And certainly this created some doubt among the populace.
I could just see the next day's victim going, look, you don't need me.
Wait a minute. Yeah.
There are so many questions I have in so little time. All right, so first of all, beyond that, very quickly, was there other human sacrifice, or is it just one a day?
Oh, no. Sometimes some of the festival, no, there could be many more than one in a day.
Like how many?
Oh, over, 20, 50.
I see. Okay. Now, there was slavery under the Aztecs because a lot of the indigenous people were not Aztecs. And we're happy to see the Spaniards as liberators. Is that right?
That's correct.
So that's important for people who romanticize the past and think that it's the Western world that introduced slavery, that it was already here.
Certainly. And not only slavery among the ancillary tribes, but slavery among the Aztec population. I mean, depending on how you were sort of a caste system, how you were born. More to the point, the states surrounding or the states within the empire had to pay a kind of tax or tribute, either in people or in goods. It might be cotton, it might be salt, things that wouldn't necessarily be available on the island areas of Tenochtitlan, the lake cities. And so there was an expectation that they would have to pay. And Cortez figured out that there were some disgruntled members of these ancillary states, and they were getting tired of offering their wives and children as payment, as a kind of tax. And so that helped Cortez be able to rally
How did the Spaniards communicate? Obviously, nobody knew these languages.
Very, very good question. Cortez had unbelievable luck throughout this campaign. And one of the things was that there was a man named Geronimo de Aguilar who had been shipwrecked on mainland Mexico, and he had lived among the Maya for 8 years. And Cortez got him when he first arrived, and this man already spoke the Mayan language. And then he also received as a gift a woman named Malinche, who spoke both Chontal Mayan and Nahuatl, the Aztec language, and she learned Spanish very quickly. So he had interpreters along the way.
Well, we'll find out how lucky he really was, how he died, and how Montezuma died. And take your calls if you have any. 1-8-PRAGER-776. 1-8-PRAGER-776. Final segment coming up with Professor Buddy Levy, the book Conquistador. Exploring life on the Dennis Prager Show. I can't imagine that there are many people not fascinated by what the new world, the old world folks found in this part of the, on this part of the earth, known as the new world. And this new book, Conquistador, about Cortez and Montezuma, is about that. It's up at PragerRadio.com, by the way. It's listed. Professor Levy has sent us a donation, and we have put it up on the list. Thank God. Thank God you chuckled. I got scared for a moment thinking that you thought that I was serious. Okay. Very good. No, it is absolutely worth reading, and I love these subjects. And let me take a couple of calls, and then I have my own more questions. 1-8-PRAGER-776 is the number, 877-243-7776. And in Long Beach, California, it's John. Hi, John. You're on with Buddy Levy and Dennis Prager. Hi.
Hey, Dennis and Professor Levy, great talking to you guys. I got two quick questions. Number one, just to be so I can be clarified, I've heard that through the course of a year, throughout the Aztec Empire, there were thousands of human sacrifices. Is that correct, or does that not make any sense?
Yeah, thousands would be correct.
All right, what was the other question, John?
The other question is, again, at the siege of Tenochtitlan, I heard that Cortez had several thousand Indian allies, but I've heard he had tens of thousands of Indian allies at the siege, and I just wondered, which is the more correct, answer?
All right, thanks, John. What is it, Professor Levy?
Closer to tens of thousands, and certainly in his preparations to one of the most miraculous elements to me of Cortez's military conquest was the building of these brigantines, which were brought over the mountains from and built. Miles away, and then carried and reconstructed, and it took something like 50,000 Tlaxcalan bearers to carry these timbers. And at the siege itself, there were the numbers vary from the sources, but over 10,000 certainly.
Mm-hmm. By the way, there's a picture in your book of Montezuma, the deity or the quasi-deity who people couldn't even look at under pain of death. If you were an Aztec and you looked at Montezuma, they actually put you to death. But here I am looking at him and living, which proves that it was a false belief. But in any event, he has a feather shield. Now, it's beautiful, but I can't think that it's terribly effective against a spear.
Well, it's very likely backed by wood, but importantly, it's a ceremonial shield, and the feather. And this is another thing that the Aztecs and the Spaniards started to learn was that the feather and the quetzal feather primarily were more valuable to the Aztecs than was gold. So,
By the way, is that the same as the Quetzal, the bird of Guatemala?
Correct, and it's a green, resplendent green color. Yeah,
Alan, you didn't think I knew that, did you? Okay. Wait, 1 minute. My producer is really moved right now.
Okay,
all right, and he stopped being moved. We can resume. They valued the feather of that bird more than gold.
Yeah, it worked out well for the Spaniards.
No
too.
Kidding. I mean, believe me, had they brought back Quetzal feathers, they would have been laughed out of Spain.
Yeah, I don't think the king would have been as impressed.
As impressed, yes. That's awesome. That is such a terrific little fact. I mean, talk about everything being relative. I mean, that's a quintessence of that. Now, what about the religiosity of Cortez? Was he a religious man?
That's a very yes, I believe he was. And sometimes, you know, these things are hard to measure, but he certainly he took mass. He didn't seem to waver from his faith. He brought priests along with him, and he ended up eventually founding a religious school in his new congregation.
What did they think religiously? Did they regard native the indigenous people? I can't say Americans, even though it's theoretically America. But did they regard them as created in God's image?
I don't think so, given the way they treated them.
Well, no, that's a separate issue. They treated a lot of people that they thought, I mean, you know, in inquisitions and so on, they still would have said the victims were created in God's image. But were they regarded as fully human, worthy of becoming Christian and so on?
Oh, yeah. In fact, many were converted. ironically, when some of the Spaniards' captains took wives, they would only take them if they were baptized first.
Okay. Now, what finally happened to Cortez and Montezuma?
Okay. Well, Cortez is, you know, he lived... He became fabulously wealthy after his achievements, and he spent a great deal of time. He became ultimately a marquis of the Valley of Mexico.
So he stayed here.
Well, he did. He went back. He died. He ultimately died back in Spain. One of the things that the conquistadors needed to do was always go back to the king and make an appeal for other kinds of commissions so that they could go do exploration and expeditions. But he died in relative obscurity, 25, 30 years after the conquest. Montezuma's demise was a little more dramatic because after he was held captive for nearly a year by Cortez and was able to be used as a puppet ruler, and he was paraded. There was a kind of uprising among his people because they could see that he wasn't really running the show.
Right.
And so Cortez paraded him out on a palace balcony and tried to get him to calm down the masses.
But they revolted.
They revolted and hurled stones.
All right, let me tell everybody again. The name of the book is Conquistador Buddy Levy. What's your next book?
My next book is another conquest-related book. It's called River of Darkness, Francisco Orellana's Historic Descent of the Amazon.
All right, I'll have you on for that, too. Thank you so much. Don't go away, folks. I got some thoughts and some calls. Where'd you find this, Sean? This is really, this is the outer limits of, you know, you don't think so? This is mainstream? Yeah, you're right. Okay. All right. I'm telling you, folks, we discussed this yesterday. The musical richness of Christmas is unparalleled by any holiday in the Western world. Maybe there's a Buddhist holiday that has created as much music, but I just wouldn't know of it. My friends, that was just riveting to me. And aside from, I've always believed history is the single most important subject. If you have to master one subject, it should be history. Every kid should major in history. Then do whatever they want. I don't care what they want. It's amazing to me that people are not more interested in what happened, because what happened is exactly what makes our life today. You know what I think when I hear about the Aztecs? There are two things that come to mind immediately. One is the staggering revolution inaugurated by the Jews or the Hebrews or the Israelites. It blows your mind. I mean, this is the world that Abraham and Moses entered, where people took out hearts from other people so that the sun will rise the next day. I mean, it's true that that wasn't the specific reason for child sacrifice and human sacrifice in the Middle East, but they had the same thing. Human sacrifice was universal, folks, universal. See, I always begin with the question of why is there good, not why is there bad. That's why I worry about America, because it has been so good, and I am worried that pushing it to some utopian, egalitarian ideal will destroy it. Goodness is an aberration. Sick evil is far more normal. And I am blown away about what the world was like when somebody said, you know, there is a God over everybody who wants you to be good and not commit sacrifice. And the other thing that I think about is the multiculturalists. Well, who's to say one culture is better than another? Well, frankly, with whatever art they produced among the Aztecs, our culture is better. And I'm going to get hate mail from that because there's a whole resurrection of Aztec nationalism, folks. I just want you to know. For whom, I guess, this aspect of their life is not all that troubling, but it should be. Ultimate Issues Hour coming up about the perennial issue. What do you tell your kid about Santa Claus? This is Dennis Prager.